What would happen if tomorrow all animal meat became toxic to humans? In Augustina Bastarrica's harrowing masterpiece, this nightmare becomes reality when a mysterious virus renders animal consumption deadly. Society's solution? Legalize the breeding and slaughter of humans for food. This isn't just another dystopian thought experiment. It's a mirror reflecting our most disturbing contradictions. Through the eyes of Marcos, a slaughterhouse inspector, we witness how quickly the unthinkable becomes routine when wrapped in bureaucracy and necessity. His world has normalized the unimaginable through clinical language. Humans are special meat or product. Slaughterhouses are processing plants, and butchery is simply processing. What makes this world truly terrifying isn't its strangeness, but its familiarity. The systems, justifications, and euphemisms echo our own relationship with consumption, ethics, and the commodification of life. The transition unfolded with alarming speed. After the virus announcement came panic, hoarding, and the mass slaughter of pets, including Marcos's dogs Pugliese and Coco. Society collapsed rapidly, with marginalized groups first to disappear into the new processing system. The government presented their solution as inevitable, systematically breeding humans for food, complete with facilities, grading standards, and marketing. At the breeding center, humans are kept naked in cages with vocal cords removed. Pregnant females have limbs amputated to prevent self-abortion. The owner discusses humans clinically, highlighting dairy head for milk production and plans for organ harvesting. Processing plants operate efficiently. Workers stun humans, slit throats, and systematically harvest body parts. Most disturbing is how quickly society normalized this practice. Butcher shops display human parts with euphemistic labels, restaurants serve mixed brochettes of ears and fingers, and the wealthy enjoy premium cuts of first-generation pure humans. Human bodies have become commodified with varying values. First-generation pure humans command premium prices for their complex flavor profiles. Different body parts yield various products. Back skin becomes luxury leather, while leg skin makes utilitarian goods. Human blood supplies medical facilities, with certain types fetching higher prices. FGP mother's milk has become a luxury commodity. The hunting industry has morphed into a grotesque luxury market, where wealthy clients pay fortunes to pursue humans for sport, with challenging specimens commanding premium fees. Others end up in research facilities, subjected to experiments without anesthesia under the pretense of scientific advancement. Marcos isn't inherently evil, he's ordinary, making incremental compromises that led down a dark path. He took the slaughterhouse job for practical reasons, good benefits, solid pay, and his father's care expenses. His gradual acceptance demonstrates how financial pressure and institutional authority normalize atrocities. Supporting characters embody different psychological responses. Spenell, the veteran butcher, embraces the new reality with clinical detachment, while Ensie represents moral resistance. Her breakdown and suicide attempt to free captives highlight the psychological toll. Most workers develop defense mechanisms, using euphemisms like products and preparation zones to distance themselves from reality. Marcos's complicity stems from personal tragedy. His infant son Leonardo's death shattered his marriage to Cecilia, creating an unbridgeable emotional gap when he couldn't process their shared grief. Their separation left him surrounded by painful reminders of their lost future. His father's dementia added further strain, requiring expensive care that drove Marcos to accept the morally compromising but lucrative processing plant position. These losses eroded his emotional capacity. At Leonardo's funeral, he stood frozen while others grieved openly. When his father died, Marcos felt only relief and numbness, viewing death as mercy from this horrific world. His persistent pain became paradoxically life-sustaining, the only proof he could still feel. Trauma affected his empathy contradictorily. Personal tragedy initially heightened his sensitivity to suffering, Yet prolonged exposure to institutionalized violence gradually deadened his responses, evident when he observed a special meat truck accident with disturbing detachment. Despite the bleakness, the novel reveals glimpses of resistance through small acts. When El Gringo delivers a female FGP, human, as a gift, Marcos can't bring himself to slaughter her. He names her Jasmine, noting her green eyes and jasmine scent, and begins caring for her. Their relationship evolves into intimacy. He dances with her beneath his dog's burial tree while listening to jazz. When she becomes pregnant, he prepares a nursery, building furniture by hand. These tender moments contrast with the world's brutality, yet the novel refuses easy redemption. After Cecilia helps deliver Jasmine's baby, Marcos shockingly clubs Jasmine on her branded forehead and drags her unconscious body to the barn for slaughter, coldly stating, "She had the human look of a domesticated animal." Other resistances emerge throughout. Marcos visits an abandoned zoo, plays with puppies he names after Rolling Stones members, and kicks down the entrance sign, thinking, now this place has no name, symbolically rejecting the New World Order. Even religion has adapted. The Church of Immolation represents zealots who volunteer to be slaughtered, believing their sacrifice will restore ecological balance. When Marcos questions this system, a trophy hunter offers a chilling philosophy. Human existence has always involved eating each other. The transition has enabled us to be less hypocritical. Basterrica's novel challenges arbitrary distinctions between humans and animals by replacing livestock with humans, forcing us to confront food system violence we typically ignore. She dismantles psychological barriers that allow meat consumption without moral responsibility. The irony isn't lost on Marcos that society condemns slavery while farming humans. When a family is prosecuted for keeping slaves, both slaves and family become special meat. The system punishes individual exploitation while institutionalizing it at scale. The novel consistently blurs human-animal boundaries. El Perro works with dog-like loyalty and contained ferocity. Jasmine possesses the human look of a domesticated animal, highlighting both her humanity and property status. Humans in breeding facilities are caged, branded, and processed on assembly lines. Industrial terminology mirrors contemporary meat production language, sanitizing violence. This blurring works bidirectionally through Marcos's relationships with animals. His memories of dogs show love and recognition of their individuality. The novel suggests human-animal distinctions reflect not inherent differences, but our willingness to recognize sentience in others. What makes this novel devastating isn't its fantastical premise, but how it mirrors our world. The systematic breeding and slaughter of sentient beings happens daily. We've simply designated different species as acceptable to consume. The euphemisms used parallel real-world terminology in the meat industry that distances consumers from animal suffering. The novel reflects broader exploitation, the commodification of bodies, dehumanization of marginalized groups, and language that normalizes violence. By making Marcos a conflicted participant rather than hero or villain, Basterrica implicates us all. How complicit are we in systems of exploitation? What euphemisms distance us from suffering? What arbitrary lines divide those deserving compassion from those we sacrifice? Perhaps most chilling is how easily we could become this world, not through a virus making animal meat toxic, but through our capacity to normalize atrocity via bureaucracy, economic necessity, and linguistic manipulation. The horror lies in recognizing that the machinery of dehumanization already exists. We're just selective about who we place on the conveyor belt.